All right, we are live here at, well, not live, this is recorded. What am I doing? Here at New York Comic Con 2017, This Week in Marvel. I'm Ben Morse, Editorial Director of Digital Media, joined by
Assistant Editor Tucker Marcus.
And we've got with us Matthew Rosenberg. Matt, what's up?
Nothing. It's second day of Comic Con, so I'm a little tired. But
you had a little trouble getting here, I understand.
Yeah, you know, I'm from New York, so I can say this, but our magnificent subway system is not always up to snuff, so...
Very cool. So you've got a bunch of exciting projects coming up. First, I want to talk about Secret Warriors, what's going on there. In the aftermath of Secret Empire, we've got Quake hunting down Deadpool. What can we expect coming up in Secret Warriors?
Yeah, after Quake finishes her vendetta, we may or may not kill Deadpool. So Deadpool fans, you might want to read it. It might be the last ever.
Gotta check out
Deadpool.
Secret Warriors. It's the only place you can find it.
Yeah. After that, we're doing our legacy arc, which is about... the Inhuman characters, we deal with a lot of the younger ones, Miss Marvel, Moon Girl, Inferno, Quake. They're facing extinction. There's no more ability to make more Inhumans. And they're caught up in a plot to save the Inhuman race. Or maybe it's not a plot to save the Inhuman race. They're not quite sure what it is. But it's all coming from big, genetic, bad guy, Mr. Sinister. So because of that, because of their war with Mr. Sinister, they recruit a new member, which is Magic from the New Mutants and the X-Men. So we're adding a vaguely psychotic part demon girl with a sword to the team, and so that's going to be fun.
I recall putting up an interview on the site with you where we kind of first teased Magic. What is the kind of unique dynamic that Magic brings to the book? What makes you? I remember you saying how excited you were to bring in that element. What exactly is it that makes that so special?
Well, for me partially, I mean, I'm an X fan. I learned to read on those books, so I love Magic. She's you know, for a lot of people, the heart and soul of the X-Men is Jean Grey or Kitty. Magic for me was always like one of my favorites because she's a little more unhinged, and that's fun. But I think the thing I like about her on the team is that the book really. A lot of the fun in the book, I think, is the tension between Miss Marvel, who is the optimistic hero who aspires to be, you know, the greatest superhero in the world, and Quake, who is, you know, raised by Nick Fury, and she's you know, the dark side, and she's willing to cross some lines. When we add Magic is the step further of like not really, you know, anything, whatever it takes to get the job done, and like not really considering a lot of ramifications. So there's a fun dynamic push-pull because Quake has always been the one who's sort of dragging them in a darker direction. And now Quake has to step back and be like, whoa, that's too far. Like, Magic is like pulling her sword on people and teleporting them to crazy places. And, you know, she's got a short fuse because she's partially a demon. And, yeah, it's just fun. The three of their dynamics, like, they don't know what to make of Magic, and Magic just doesn't care. She's, you know, she's got her family and her team, and this is not it. She's just... here to go after Sinister. So
it talks about being big into X-Men, learning to read on the X-Men. Of course, you've got a huge X-Men project coming up with Phoenix Resurrection. What does it mean to you to be able to tell a story that's going to be quintessential in the X-Men canon moving forward?
I mean, it's, you know, to call it dream come true stuff is an exaggeration. It's not an exaggeration, you know, either one. It's amazing. It's, I love Jean, and I think Jean's death, you know, Dark Phoenix Saga, death of Jean Grey, like, is some of the greatest comics ever made. And so for me, bringing her back is not something we're taking lightly. I said, when they talked to me about this project, I said, like, this can't just be a retcon or a reversing of something. This has to be part of that story, and all the things that happened to her, like, matter, and those stakes are raised, and what does it mean that she's back? And that's sort of what we're playing with, is like, you know, this character that maybe should be dead is back, and it's heartbreaking and sad that she's dead. And, you know, I think, like, the X-Men since Jean's death is missing something, and can she come back and be that thing is a question that will reverberate, I think, for the X-Men for a long time. So it's a huge responsibility, and we're not taking it lightly. It's we're hoping that longtime X-Men fans understand the stakes, we think they will, and new readers who, you know, are curious about Jean or whatever, I think it's a good place to start to, like, really set the stage for what the X-Men are going to be moving forward.
You spoke about Dark Phoenix and growing up on X-Men. What do you see as any kind of inspirations that you're bringing specifically to that storyline, to bringing Jean back?
I mean, for me, a lot of what we're pulling from, I mean, it's funny because I think Jean, like I said, she's, you know, so crucial a piece of the X-Men and what they are. And the X-Men is a lot of things to a lot of people, the 60s X-Men, the 70s X-Men, 80s, 90s now. So a big thing for us in the book is making sure that the stakes are big enough that you understand that, like, if you're a New Mutants person or a Wolverine and the X-Men fan or any of those, like, those characters are going to be there and you're going to see how they deal with this and how this is, you know, this is all hands on deck for the X-Men. This is, like, potentially world ending and potentially their part of their family's fault. So that's we're pulling from everything. If you know, like, it's a book that you can read if you've never read an X-Men comic, but if you want deep cuts, this is a deep cuts book. There are a lot of nods to things that are, you know, in an issue, in a page, in a panel. Like, if there's an X-Men you're like, I haven't seen that X-Men in 10 years, like, look in the backgrounds, or maybe in the foregrounds. There's a couple we put up in the forefront who people are going to be excited by. But I think, you know, a lot of it, like, since we're doing a return of Jean Grey, a lot of what we're pulling from is Claremont's run, is that, you know, heightened soap opera, that, like, real family dynamic, the dysfunctional family dynamic that, like, I think is what drew me and millions of people to the X-Men for years.
And when you say you're incorporating all these X-Men, all these characters, I gotta ask, who is your favorite to write so far?
My favorite X-Men to write so far? I mean, I love Kitty. I mean, Magic's in there. I'm not, spoiler, we haven't said that, but Magic has a moment. I love Kitty, and I love Colossus, and, like, getting to play with them is amazing. Kitty has a real big role, and Beast has a real big role, and the two of them together, and, like, not necessarily seeing eye to eye because of Jean's. Jean means different things to them. Like, Hank grew up with her, and Kitty, she was, you know, sort of an older sister figure who, you know, went to a real bad place. So, like, they're not approaching things in the same way, and that's really fun. I think the two of them, people are, if you're a fan of Kitty or Beast, you're really going to like it. And, you know, there's a really good Strong Guy cameo, so nice. I like that. Yeah.
Love Strong Guy.
Another exciting thing on the horizon is we get to see the Matthew Rosenberg sensibility unleashed on Frank Castle. What can you say about starting that process, about working on the Punisher so far? How's it been?
It's amazing. I'm a huge Punisher fan. I feel like such a nerd on these things always, because, like, no matter what comes up, I'm like, I'm a huge fan of that.
That's good, man.
It is.
Good for the resume.
I keep waiting for someone to be like, oh, what about this character? I'm like, I don't really care about that. That's the one I don't like.
No, I don't like
The it's Silver Sable. If you're wondering,
Sable, okay.
I don't care. No, I actually like Silver Sable.
Yeah.
Pitching
for Silver Sable. Now.
Yeah. Now, guys, I'm writing Silver Sable in January. It's not true.
It's not true. Not true. Get away from your computers, everyone.
Yeah. It's amazing. I Frank Castle for me is the Frank Castle I love is I grew up on 80s Frank Castle on that, you know, Circle of Blood, all that stuff. Punisher, and he was a hero because I was a little kid, and then, you know, I had that moment that I've talked to a lot of Punisher fans who've had this moment where, like, you read Garth Ennis's Punisher, and it recontextualizes the character in a very serious way of, like, his heart is almost in the right place, but it's dark and it's disturbing, and he's a troubled man. He's a very dangerous, bad person who, you know, he blurs a lot of lines, you know, my take going into the Punisher was, you know, he's a simple answer to very complex questions. He's everything is, you know, you end it with a bullet, and that's not necessarily the nuance of the Marvel Universe these days. And so I wanted to see Punisher taken to a logical conclusion, to a place where it's like, yeah, he's just more dangerous and scary than he's been. So our Punisher story, starting in November, is Frank Castle. There's a coup, a military coup. A fascist government takes over a country in Europe, a small country. And through various ways, Frank is enlisted to end that. And that's not normally something you can do with a pistol and a hunting knife. So Frank is forced to ramp up, and he steals the War Machine armor. Rhodey, who is no longer with us, has left it with the military, and Frank is determined to get it back. And I think the idea, you know, I know a lot of fans of War Machine and Rhodey are scared that we're making this, you know, Rhodey is a hero. There's no denying that. And they're like, oh, you're making the Punisher, you're tarnishing his legacy. And I think if I do my job well, the point is that Rhodey's legacy is greater because of this, because this is the nightmare version of War Machine. This is Rhodey is this sort of ideal of what this power and this force could be for good, and Frank is how it could be used and abused. So I think that's what you're going to get from this is like, we're not replacing Rhodey. Nothing would ever replace Rhodey. What we're doing is showing why Rhodey's so amazing, because we're giving it to Frank and showing how horrific it could be if these weapons ended up on Frank's body.
It really stuck with me there what you said about how, like, the recontextualizing of the Punisher and how, like, as you grow up, you kind of go from just the simplistic view of him as a hero to something very different. And you talked a little bit about this, but how do you switch gears in your mind, your writing mind, when you're working on a Secret Warriors or a Resurrection of Phoenix and you're writing kind of these pure heroic characters, then you've got to slide over and write someone like the Punisher? How do you shift gears there?
I mean, my first two series at Marvel were Rocket Raccoon and Kingpin, so I had a good bit of polarity there. But it, you know, it's tricky because you don't. They all exist in the same universe, and that's what's beautiful about them. But it is like psychologically a challenge to show the really unnerving, disturbing side of the Marvel universe, and, you know, and then go to write Ms. Marvel, who I think is, yeah, you know, the ideal Marvel hero.
Right.
But I think that you see it as a bigger picture. It's a tapestry. That's the thing I always remind myself, is that, like, I'm just sewing a couple stitches on this quilt that stretches back way before I was born and will go long after I'm dead. And so it's about seeing the bigger picture and always zooming out. Like, what does it mean that Frank is scary and terrifying, and how does that affect Ms. Marvel? What does that mean for Ms. Marvel? What does it mean for for Jean Grey? And I think, like, it's important to write the character that you're writing, but always the joy of the Marvel universe is to always remember, like, you know, I'm writing the Kingpin, and he's a gangster in New York, and somewhere up above him in the sky, there's a space raccoon who's stealing things and shooting people. And those elements have to work together. And I think that's the key, is to just, you always have it in the back of your head that it's like, this is the biggest shared universe of amazing characters that humans have ever seen. And, like, just be respectful of that. And that's what I try to do in everything I do.
To wrap things up, you've spoken so much about what a big fan you've been of Marvel for so long, and now that you're such an instrumental part of the narratives that are being told in the universe, here at Comic-Con, what's it like to be here as both a fan and as a creator now? What is the kind of global perspective you take on the kind of overall everything that New York Comic-Con represents in terms of fandom, in terms of the stories that we tell?
I mean, I think it's... the amazing thing for me, my girlfriend always makes fun of me about this, because I'll get on the subway and there'll be a guy in a Punisher shirt or, like, in a Rocket Raccoon shirt, and I smile.
Isn't
every
that
time.
Crazy that you can say Rocket Raccoon shirt now, and that's a thing?
yeah, for sure. But, you know, I smile, and she's like, I don't say anything because I'm in New York City on the subway, and you don't just start talking to other people. but it's this feeling of like, yeah, there's a shared sense that we're into the same thing. It's a club, and it's you know, one of the biggest clubs in the world. But I really feel that, like, there's Marvel stuff for everything, and Comic-Con is that realized to just this enormous degree. I think, you know, I sit at my table in Artist Alley, and people stop by because they love Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and they know that Quake is in Secret Warriors, and they want to talk to me about the show, and I love it. And then they, you know, love this TV show, or they love, you know, they were like, I haven't read Punisher since, you know, 92. What are you going to do? And it's like, we have all of this. We have, you know, I'm talking to 8-year-old girls and 7-year-old guys about all of it, and we all are just so excited about everything and to be here. And, you know, I mean, it's exactly that. Like, you've got the guy in the Rocket Raccoon shirt, and when I was a kid, that was not a thing. You know, the Punisher shirt was rare when I was a kid. Sure. And now that's a, you know, any subway train's got a guy in a Punisher shirt on it. I mean, I think it's just this amazing, I don't ever want to lose the sense of fandom. Mm-hmm. I was privy the other day to some of the future plans for the Marvel Universe. Just casually, someone was like, "Oh, well, this is happening," and I had to stop myself from being like, "Don't tell me! I want to read it," which is awesome. And I, you know, there's that moment of like, well, I'm making this stuff, and that's I want to make the books that I want to read, and I want to make the books that the fans will care about in 10 years and 20 years. And 100 years, and that's a great responsibility. But it's also, you know, the great thing about the Marvel Universe is that, like, I'm a lifelong fan, and I'm in here, and I'm doing it, and that could be anyone, and that's awesome.
I think that's a good way to wrap it, Matt. Thank you so much for joining us, man. We really appreciate it. Have a good rest of your con.
Thank you.
This is Marvel,
your universe.